Blog Talk Radio.
A Monday warrior, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean pride.
Good afternoon on the East Coast, good morning on the West Coast, and a great day to you wherever and whenever you may be listening. This is The Power of Performance, the show that asks the question, if your brand were a band, would you leave the audience wanting more? My name is Jason Dias, broadcasting live from the studios of eloquentonline.net in beautiful, rainy, thunderstormy New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof. And a long, long walk, but a short flight on the Millennium Falcon. His name is Tough Talkin' Troy Hall, out at South Carolina Federal Credit Union. Hey, buddy, how's it going?
Well, it's beautiful here, and so we're not dealing with any of the rain and thunderstorms. But I am going to tell you that I have a knock-knock joke that is going to help you out with one of our theme words for today, which is disruptor.
Disruptor, but it's not going to contribute to the dead air time. Okay, all right,
It's a knock-knock joke.
Ask away.
Okay, knock-knock.
Who's there?
Interrupting cow.
Interrupting cow who?
That was the joke, interrupting cow. I interrupted you before you could say who's there. Interrupting cow.
Well,
interrupting
you.
Cow's going to be a disruptor today. So.
I wrote it down here on my little this paper pad that I keep with me when I do this show. It says buzzword. I got a little arrow marks pointing to the word disruptor. Troy, we have a winner. We have a winner. The new Credit Union Conference Clan buzzword that they first heard at a conference and then thought about at the airport, then came home and retweeted on their PCs and MacBooks and iPads and iPhones is disruptor. Now, I want your honest to God PhD candidate in global leadership opinion on this. I'm going to give you mine first.
Okay.
To me, it is more of the same with our good buddies in Generation Y. Look at me. Look how I disrupt things. Look how I crash the GAC. Look at me. Do not ask me about results. Ask me about intentions because I'm disrupting something.
Well, I have a little different spin on it. And so for me, the term disruptive, when I first heard about it, or disruptor, when I first heard about it, refers back to a score that we call Net Promoter Score, which is a process by which we can evaluate the consumer experience and the ability of that consumer to actually refer their family, friends, and coworkers to the credit union. And a disruptor is a person who expresses a lukewarm opinion and doesn't get hot or cold. And so when the experience is lukewarm, they are really being disruptive to the process because they're not able to articulate, or they don't want to, or they don't feel they can, or something is a disconnect between, it's really not that bad, it's not that good, I'm just going to be yodi-dody in the middle.
Right in
and
the
so
middle
that is,
of the
and
road.
And that's disruptive.
Exactly.
If it's cold and it needs to be hot, I know how then to fix it. To make it hot, because you've given me enough information, I can then go, oh, well, that's where we screwed up, or, oh, that's what we didn't do. And if it's hot, then we can say, yes, that's what we do right, folks.
Do more
keep replicating that because that's what we want to be able to do. That's what the audience wants. So this is the type of music they want you to play. This is the tempo they want you to play. So keep playing it. This other one's like, nah, they don't want you. That puts them to sleep. They don't want to do that. The other one says, well, you know, the music was okay. You know, it's like all right. You know? Seriously. And typically, what do we know about lukewarm? You spit lukewarm out of your mouth.
It's
you either want
worthless.
It cold, you want it hot, lukewarm is gone.
Exactly. Nobody wants a lukewarm shower. Hey, listen, folks, this is The Power Performance. We want to thank our sponsor, GoMarquis.com, GoMarquis, GoMarquis.com, well known for their MCIF and CRM software solutions. They are also one of the fastest growing creative agencies in the banking marketplace. I got to send a huge shout out to Virginia, the Old Dominion, my good buddy Alexia Carruth, Alexandria Carruth, is out there in the hospital. She's listening to the show today. I told her I'd say, hey, I love traveling around the country and meeting new people and talking about the show that Troy and I do each and every week. But Alexandria is out there doing some treatments. And I said, hey, just get your iPhone or your smartphone and hit this link and you can listen to me and Troy, and you and other people all across the country can claim to have wasted the better part of their lunch hour with us. But today we're going to be talking about we're going to be talking about
you disruptor.
How dare you disrupt the show. We're going to be talking about, it's the mid-year mixdown, man. Here it is, June, next week. I thought I would talk to Troy about this in the pre-show. We might have to talk about it on the regular show. Next week is the show before the 4th of July. Do we not do a show? Do we do an all-music show? I want to enjoy that week and kind of, it's a three-day weekend, the 4th of July falling on a Friday, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that. But most of all, we're going to talk about, it's the mid-year of 2014. How many hashtags have you tweeted compared to how many small businesses have you intentionally engaged as a marketing professional at your credit union or banking brand? How often do you get out there and actually talk to the real people that Troy and I have been interviewing for the better part of 5 years? We're going to talk about a show we did 4 years ago. We called it Interview with a Generation. We called them Millennials because I had not had Christy Ortiz on the show that called them Generation Z. The questions we asked them, the answers they gave us, the proof, the ROI, whatever you want to call it, was obvious then. It's obvious now. And we're going to talk about all of it right after this. Panama, baby. You know who you are. I sent you a link. I sent you an email. 4th Battalion, 21st Infantry, 7th Infantry Division, Light Alpha Company, Panama, 1988. Nobody did it like we did. Troy, I sent you the link to the article.
Yes.
And it opens up with a brand that I have never had any experience. I have never stayed at a Ritz-Carlton hotel. I obviously can't afford it. I've never had the chance to do so. But this article is all about stop counting numbers and start counting how people genuinely engage your brand. And I wanted to get your PhD perspective when you first read this article.
Well, to give our listeners a little background, what it is an article written from about Ritz-Carlton. And it's about how social media the topic is social media failed to live up to early marketing hype and how the company refined its strategies to stress quality over quantity. Of fans.
Yep.
And that is, there's several lessons in this particular article between what Ritz-Carlton, their approach and what they did, what they discovered, and how we might be able to, as professionals, marketing professionals and sales professionals, be able to leverage that and use it. So basically what occurred is Ritz-Carlton started a process that just simply got into the bandwagon like everyone else. Everyone said, hey, here's the strategy. Get as many people to like your Facebook page as possible so that you've got this great group of people that you can market to. And so I liken that strategy to the same one as when individuals go to a conference, they hear an idea from a conference speaker, they come back and implement the idea, and they don't know if that strategy matches with the structure or not. So here is one of the largest companies in the world that builds its brand on luxury, not on price or anything else, and it figured out that because luxury is a quality sort of value, they figured out, oh my gosh, my social media approach should also be quality driven, which is luxuries, which is the same way in which we interact and we connect with our consumers. So what they have done is they figured out how to make that strategy and that structure work together. And they realized that they could be diluting their brand by just getting a variety of likes across the country, because those likes can come from individuals who are just enamored with the concept of liking. I mean,
and
I
have
to
never,
tell you,
ever been to your hotel.
Oh, yeah. I will tell you that I have some – when I send out posts and my status reports and things and people like stuff, I'm wondering, do you really like it, or were you liking it just to say, hey, I read your stuff? You know, like I don't really have much of an opinion. I kind of like – so you see, this is where this distractor now actually builds into it, because you see the disruptor. I'm sorry, disruptor. Where the disruptor builds into this conversation, because if the individual is liking it but they have no intentions of making it good or bad, then they are disrupting, because now they're a voting influence potentially – of which they're going to ignore every energy and resource that we put to them, because they have no intentions of ever really connecting or responding to them. They just sort of got it hyped up into the mode of liking.
To me, this was the perfect medium for Generation Y, social media. If you could show your boss that your Facebook page had 40 new likes in the month of June, 2012 or 2013 or whatever, they thought there was some value attached to that. To me, Generation Y, against all odds, applied a 20th century industrial marketing criteria to a 21st century social technology. When I listened back to the show that we did back in 2010, it was called Interview with a Generation. We interviewed three young people that would all be considered not Generation Y, but whatever we're going to call the generation after that. We've called them here on this show millennials, Generation Z, the digital citizen, whatever you want to call them. I listened back to that show. The first thing that hit me was the sound quality was terrible. This is back in the old Radio Free Credit Union days. I don't even think I had my MacBook now to push the show through Skype and all this stuff. I think I just called in on like a regular cell phone or a regular office phone. And I was struck by how different the show sounded. But what I was also struck by was that way back then, before you were the co-host of the show, we were focused on the social smallness of the American marketplace. Sarah, Isaac, and Caitlin had five or six friends that they connected with each and every day, each and every week, each and every month, at school, at church, at around town, live, work, and worship, and go to school. The original community credit union charter that was supposed to bring all of this newfound glory to credit unions. Troy, you told me before this show that this conversation is something we can talk about with the legislative action that gave credit unions that community charter, and you seemed very, very passionate about it. Tell us about it.
Well, I did. What I felt was the connection between this article and the fact that they focused on quality and not quantity really for me likens back to when we were granted the open field of membership in a community setting. And I believe that what occurred during the time, and when I do speak at conferences and when I do have speaking opportunities and I talk a little bit about field of membership and the model for the credit union, I kind of go back to our roots. And what really happened was we opened the door to exactly what Ritz-Carlton is doing, or what they said they did, and then they fixed it. And I'm not sure how we actually get to fix it, but what occurred was we had this homogenous group of people with our current field of membership. We could predict whether they would charge off their loan. We could make lending decisions based on it. We could do marketing promotions. We knew how to spend our money. We would actually get more for our buck because we had these companies who were helping us to promote our brand and promote our product to our employees by saying, hey, come in, and then we'll make sure that all new employees who come into this organization, they will actually open accounts for you because they see this as a benefit. We had all of that. As soon as we then got the field of membership, what immediately happened is we went to individualistic berserk because we then said, oh, we're going to open the doors and then we're going to let everybody come in. Like, oh, my gosh, it's going to be great. We're going to grow our business like crazy. Well, we did grow to some degree, although people didn't stampede in because they still were confused. Like, well, what's a credit union?
What's
your doors are open.
Can I join?
I still don't,
can I join?
I still don't know
can
that
I be
I
a member?
Yeah, like, basically, it's kind of like when you walk by a shopping center and you see the door open and you go, the door is open. Like, isn't that costing more from the energy perspective because they got to keep it cool so the door is open and the heat's coming in?
Well,
I mean, like why
Troy,
is that door
Troy,
open?
Let me ask you this. You talk about the door being open. I live in New Braunfels, Texas, not a big city. If you're not from Texas, or you probably have never heard of New Braunfels, Texas. We're just about 22 miles north of San Antonio and about 30 miles south of Austin. I was going to pick up some Chinese food on Saturday, just getting dinner, you know, just kind of not – we don't want to cook. We're just going to get dinner. And I was walking to the Chinese restaurant, and there's this store. I think it's called Sterling McCall. They sell products to cosmetologists. I did not know that a regular person cannot walk in there and buy a thing of hairspray or a blow dryer or what do the girls use? Troy, you've been married for a long time. Those things they use to curl their hair. What are they called?
Curling iron?
Curling iron.
Or straightener.
Curling iron, whatever.
Right,
I'm
because
like, well,
they sell to the retailer, not to the consumer.
I didn't know that. And so I get to the front door, and there's this huge sign. This is not a public brand. If you don't have a license, do not come in. And I'm like, really? You're not letting me buy a $20 curling iron that's going to benefit your business because I never went to cosmetology? Well, I was like, whatever. Okay. What I want to ask you, because this article was a very, very I don't want to be the guy that says, look, I told you this. I told you so. I said earlier this was the perfect thing for Generation Y. I don't want people to misconstrue what I'm saying. I believe there is the majority voice of Generation Y in the credit union marketplace, the credit union conference clan. And I think there is the minority voice, the one that I agree with. We had one of those people on last week. We had your buddy, D-Train, from South Carolina, Dizzy.
Yep.
And it was a great interview, very, very honest. He did not answer everything the way I thought he would, had I answered those questions for myself. But again, I reminded myself, I'm not part of his generation or his educational, professional development experience. I really enjoyed last week's show. When we get back from the break, I want to ask you a question about the overall approach that credit unions have taken to social media. Is it really a social media strategy if your last 100 tweets or Facebook posts are about the fact that you're closed on a federal holiday? If your last, 50% of your tweets are about a marketing promotion that no one's ever heard of. I want to talk about that. We've got, only 12 minutes left on this show. And I also want to ask you about the experience that is social media, not for people like us that work at a financial brand or deal with financial brands, but going again back to 2010, we're at the midpoint of 2014, but I went back to 2010 to listen to a show that we did a long, long time ago. And what I found out is that these social interactions, your friends and your family is where your brand strategy starts, and everything else is left to chance. We'll talk about it right after this.
Man, when I'm listening to The Power of Performance, I just can't decide who's hotter, Jason or Troy.
Well, you can't tell by the way I use my voice. I'm a woman, man. No time to talk.
You can see a picture of Troy on the episode page. Troy, we're talking about social media, and Twitter is up 2.23%. That cannot be a coincidence. Not when you and I are on it. I mean, it's that...
I mean, seriously. And if we keep retweeting everything that you and I say, then we'll certainly increase our numbers.
I thought about social media, and I hate using that term. I've never spoken in cliches. I spoke professionally for 10 years. I never used the term out of the box or what is that thing they say, see the forest around the trees or near the trees or whatever it is. I never spoke like that. I never spoke in those cliched forms of communication. What I think has happened in the credit union marketplace, which is a gigantic part of my marketplace and my audience, that's how I pay my bills every month. To me, when I monitor Twitter on the days that I do it, I feel like I'm attending the same morning meeting with the same people talking about the same things over and over again, to the point that the experience with Twitter has become routine, not valuable.
Well, I think there's two approaches to doing it. So, you know, and again, just adding back to the conversation before with the concept of Ritz-Carlton and how that actually applies to this is that, you know, it's about the quality of what you're doing, not the quantity. And so when we focus on field of membership as that aspect, building that back to answer your question, it's really focusing on the quality, the homogeneous group. And I think what's important to understand in the social media realm is if you are doing it as a checklist, then it becomes a checklist item, and it becomes very routine, very mundane, very, you know, like non-engaging. And the whole idea of social media is supposed to be engaging. The problem is that we've almost made it, we've made it unauthentic and disingenuous, because in many cases, organizations do not create the relationship with people. It is the people within the organization that create the relationship with people. And we have found ourselves that we do a better job with social media when it is our own individual people reaching out and connecting to people and consumers. And our presence in social media is so that we know that anyone who wants to play in that arena can do so, and we'll be there for them to have a conversation or a voice. But the engagement aspect in social media of an institution to its consumers basically comes in the form of an education. You don't have listen, I don't talk to Coach, the store. I talk to the employees.
Exactly.
I don't talk to Target. I talk to the employees.
Better check it out. Yep.
Yeah. So basically now, and if I have a good relationship with the employees of Target that I might talk to, then I can relate that back to the company itself, because guess what? The brand of the company is only as strong as the individuals who are representing it.
Exactly.
So when you come
and that's
to
not
social
media.
Media.
That's what happens
right.
When you're there. You're there with your wife. You're there with your kids.
Yeah.
You're there with your grandkids.
It's the experience.
It's the experience. It's the experience.
And that's why when we interviewed that group 5 years ago, almost 5 years ago.
4 years ago.
Still hold true today. That it still holds true that the connection is a small group of people who actually connect and talk to each other. They're not reaching out in social media to the masses.
Nope.
The Gen Y and millennial, by the way, are the same term. It's the millennials and the Gen Y are considered the same group.
Yep,
the
exactly.
Digital generation or the Z generation is what we have talked about as the next group to follow.
Next group.
But in that millennial and that Gen Y group, they're not social media talking to 500 people. They're talking to 5 to 10 people. It's a very close connection, a very close connectivity. What Facebook did is it introduced my generation, the baby boomers, to a world of connectivity for the long-lost people
not
that
just,
we lost
not just
contact
your generation,
with.
Troy. Not just
yeah,
your generation,
could,
my mom and dad's generation. Not World War II, but that silver senior generation, that 71, 69-year-old generation. It's all about connectivity. It's all about
and so,
your ability.
And so what happened is we became a disruptor to Facebook because Facebook was about connecting with people that you lost contact with. But what
Absolutely
we
right.
then started doing was we started using it as a way to spy on our children. Because why? Because we are the helicopter parents and we are controlling. And so therefore this is a way for us
Just
to do it.
Said it.
And then, so And why then, so then why is it that social media from that aspect, why is the Gen Y group then stayed, and why do they go back into this retreating into their tweets back and forth or their texting back and forth? Because it's not the same for us. We don't see it in the same vein, and so therefore it doesn't connect as well for us as it does for them. And it's not a playground that we have been playing in. Therefore, it's still their own private little playground. And
I'll tell you what. When I get finished with the show today, I have a very, very specific routine on Wednesday when we do the national show. I go to the grocery store. I get dinner for Wednesday night. I come home. I clean my office from top to bottom. My studio, my office is immaculate when the show starts. I dust everything. Today's show, ahead of next week's, whether we decide to do an all-music show or no show at all, I want it to really be about the midpoint of the year that is 2014. But every time I went back and did research and show prep, it was about so much more than that. In the show description, I said, there are those of you that think hashtags are making you money. I didn't mean that in a condescending, I-know-it-all way. I was told about Twitter. I didn't tell anybody else about Twitter. I was a latecomer to this social media that we talk about all the time. When we get back from the break, and we've only got one left, we get less than 5 minutes on the show today, I want to ask Troy about where do we go from here. There's no way to really monetize all of these efforts, all of these tweets, all of these retweets, all this Facebook stuff, all of this Instagram and pet calendar contest and stuff like that. My opinion, as a 46-year-old, is that the most valuable relationship-building moments still occur on the phone and in the lobby and in the drive-up, which seems counter to the social media world that we've all come to understand since 2008. When we get back from the break, I'm going to ask Troy about this, and we'll wrap up the show, and we'll do it all right after this. You can listen online. You can listen on your smartphone. You can listen later whenever you need to. This is the power of performance. Hey, Troy, we do the show 1,200 or 1,300 miles apart, but we have some of the same habits. We both go to church on Sunday. I was at church on Sunday. I saw Emma, our president, the president of Eloquent, online. She was there. She's home for the summer from Texas A&M as she gets into her sophomore year. I saw some of the other guests that we've had on the show for many years. And my thought was, my experience with social media is one of getting to know it. It's just something I had to learn about. For their generation, it's always been there. It's just something that is like, to you and me, you know, free plumbing, a telephone right. service at the house. I think the great question going forward, since we chose to do a mid-year mixdown, if we had to give strategic planning advice to credit unions and banking brands all across the country, do we minimize the value of social media, or do we simply need to rethink how we are exploiting it for the value of our brand?
Okay, so what I'm going to kind of to remind folks of is that the majority of individuals who use social media do so to connect with their families and friends. The data is out there that tells us that that's the reason they do it. The reason that we engage in social media is so that we make sure that folks understand we have a voice and a platform by which we are willing to respond to you in a variety of ways. We're not going to limit the way we respond to you. The most effective way of responding to a person is on a face-to-face value. And we know that in complex situations and complex product discussions, even Gen Y wants to talk to you face-to-face or on the phone because they need some additional assistance. It's not just a real simple one-off, here's a tweet, here's an email, here's a whatever, and I can do it. It's not intuitive. It's complex. I've got questions and answers. This question is like, it seems like one question, but it might lead me to three or four new questions depending upon how you answer it. That's a dynamic conversation and has to happen with an exchange. It doesn't happen on a linear version, or it's not productive if it's just on a linear version. It's very dynamic. It's what we call a kairos conversation, where multiple things are happening at one time, as opposed to chronos, exactly, which is it happens in a chronological format. So exactly, putting that in perspective, I say that. Now, what I'm going to say is, if you do leverage social media and you do want to get involved and you do want to connect with people, I think it's important that it does connect somehow back to your brand. And you don't want to just be doing things for the sake of doing things. And I think an example that we mentioned, I know we've only got a couple of minutes before we close, is to say that if you're going to If you're going to do something in the social media realm to attract people's attention, make sure it matches up with your brand somehow. Don't just do it as an exercise in order to because it's trendy. If it's taking pictures of pets and you post pictures of pets and you say, oh, my gosh, that's the best social media campaign I've ever done in my entire life, you have to ask yourself, are people just posting pictures because they like their pets and you've given them an outlet? Or do they identify some connectivity between the love and the affection they have for their pet and the love and affection they have for your brand? If there's a you can't say that metric means something to you if there's a disconnect between who you are and what their emotional connection is, because that's what really builds the brand to make it work. It's the emotional connection. And when we have an opportunity, we're going to talk about the emotional connection as it impacts the consumer decision-making. And this is some of the additional research that we've been doing in that field of genernomics.
Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We have plenty of time. We're at Midpoint Mixdown. We're the midpoint of 2014. I have over 20 shows left for the balance of the year. We're going to talk about all of it. And you just said it. You always talk about the takeaways, the quote keepers, and stuff like that. People care more about their pets than your brand. And if they share their pet's picture with your brand, it's because they love their pets first and like your Facebook page second. And when you understand that equation, you understand everything. My name is Jason Dias. We have to sign off. We are almost a minute into bonus time, but it won't seem like it. A one-hour webinar is going to seem much, much longer than a 32-minute radio show with Jason and Troy, where the hosts are hot. Wait, where the talk is hot, but
the
hosts
talk
are?
You see, that's right. Yeah, you got it right the first time. The hosts are hot, baby, and then the topics, we do that. So guess what?
I was trying to be so modest
people connect
about
with
it.
Us because we're hot, and then the topics just come as part of the brand.
They do indeed. Hey, listen, man. People that don't know, Troy has a full-time gig. He's got a full-time job at a big multi-billion-dollar credit union brand. We talk before the show. We talk about the show. We talk about talking points and guests and stuff like that. We didn't have a guest today. But I sent him an email this morning where he knew I was worried about how we fill up 30 minutes of time, and here we are well into bonus time. Hey, brother, you have a great week out there in Charleston, South Carolina, where even when it rains,
the sun still shines, which is what it's doing now. I love
and
it.
Right here, what it's doing right now, it is raining. We got thunderstorms. I know because I can, A, look at my iPhone that says it's raining with thunderstorms, or I can look at my window and see that it's raining. This is the power of performance, the show that asks the question, if your brand were a band, would you leave the audience wanting more? Add up your tweets. Add up your retweets. Add up your mentions. And you tell me, what is the ROI on that social media experience? Have you cut to the heart and minds of your keep it audience, the people that have kept you in business since before social media was something that we talked about and debated? Again, my name is Jason Dias. I'm broadcasting live from the studios of eloquentonline.net in beautiful New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof. And until next week, we'll talk to you soon. Nice.